We need a global policeman, and the United States is the only reliable and desirable candidate for that job.
I think his remarks are divisive, stupid, and wrong, and I think if he came to visit our country, I think he'd unite us all against him.
Donald Trump is a leader. He will reassert America's position as the nation with the best values to lead the world.
When you have the nuclear codes at your fingertips, you can't have a thin skin or a tendency to lash out. You need to be steady and measured and well-informed.
If I was an American citizen, I wouldn't vote for Hillary Clinton if you paid me.
I have great faith in the American people. Look forward to working with whoever gets elected in November.
Hello and welcome to the global election on Monocle 24. I'm Steve Bloomfield. Later this year, the USA votes for a new president. But this isn't an election that affects only Americans. It matters to the rest of the world too. From war and peace to the economy and the environment, what happens in America has an impact on us all. And a large part of that is influenced by the president, whoever he or she may be. So over the next 10 weeks, we'll look at what this election could mean for the rest of the world. Welcome to the global election. This week, we'll be asking whether the US is still the world's policeman. And if it is, will it remain so after the election? In a moment, I'll be joined in the studio by Zanya Wickett, head of the US program at Chatham House, and Alexander Nekrasov, a former advisor at the Kremlin. But first, let's speak to Richard Sheriff, NATO's former Deputy Supreme Allied Commander, Europe. Richard Sheriff, welcome to Monocle 24. Let's start with a big question. Does the world actually need America to play this role of the global policeman?
Yes, I think it does. American power and influence for the good, generally speaking, is a stabilizer for the world. We know where we are with America. I think a vacuum from America is a real concern.
When you say a vacuum from America is a real concern, is that something that you're worried about happening in the coming years?
Over the last few years, we've seen a reluctance from America to step in where perhaps America would have stepped in before. Now, it's easy to say, that's understandable, because America is smarting as a result, and indeed not just America, but the impact of the engagement in Iraq, in Afghanistan, of course, has made people think again. And we've seen, though, America stepping back from Europe, particularly with the so-called Asia-Pacific pivot. Now, America is returning to Europe. We saw the failure to follow through on the red line about the use of chemical weapons in Syria. And I think that has sent a signal about America's willingness to engage in the world to defend the values that America espouses and the rest of us espouse in the West.
During this election, there has been a lot of talk about NATO and whether America would still abide by Article 5, which says that an attack on one is an attack on all. Do you take those discussions seriously?
Very seriously. The signal that was sent by Republican presidential candidate Trump that he might not, as president, come to the aid of a NATO member if attacked, would be utterly catastrophic for the alliance if carried through. At a stroke, it renders the alliance's founding principle, as you've so rightly said, Article 5, incredible. American, or at least European, defense since 1949 has depended on the absolute certainty that America would unconditionally come to the aid of a NATO member if attacked, and any suggestion that it wouldn't renders the alliance ineffective and effectively destroys the credibility of the alliance.
Can you talk us through what would then happen if that scenario you've just painted were to come to pass and a NATO alliance essentially wouldn't really exist anymore? What would be the threat?
Well, NATO has been the most successful alliance the world has ever seen. It's gusting 70 years old in 3 years' time or so. It kept the peace in Europe during the Cold War and was very effective in the years after the Cold War with a number of crisis management operations, notably in the Balkans and, of course, Afghanistan with the ISAF operation, which The jury remains out, but I think providing the international community remains engaged, NATO set the scene for relative stability there. But we'll too early to say. But to return to the main question, NATO is essential now in maintaining peace and security in Europe, particularly with a resurgent Russia threatening on the east. Without NATO, and most importantly, without America engaged in European defence, Europe returns to being a collection of European states unable, really, to pull together in the way that NATO allows them to do. And, of course, what we've seen is twice in the last century, in the First World War and in the Second World War, and then throughout the years of the Cold War, America's engagement in Europe was essential to European defence. Remove NATO, remove that, you remove European peace and security.
You really think it's that serious?
I think it's that serious, yeah.
Richard Scherff, thank you very much indeed. You're listening to The Global Election here on Monocle 24 with me, Steve Bloomfield. My guests joining me now here in Midori House are Xenia Wickett, head of the US program at Chatham House, and Alexander Nekrasov, a former advisor at the Kremlin. Xenia and Alexander, welcome to you both. Xenia, perhaps if I can begin with you. Has the US always seen itself as the global policeman, or is it a role it has reluctantly, occasionally taken on?
I think since the US has defined itself as a global player, which is now, we're talking back 6 or 7 decades, it has taken on a responsibility as, excuse the language, but the demise of the United Kingdom, it has taken on the role of the only real global player, and as such, with global interests and with the ability to act globally. No other actor has in the last few decades had the ability to do that. China is coming close, but still is not considered to be a global player, nor does it want to take on those responsibilities. What's been interesting in the last couple of decades is really the United States has started to say it doesn't want to be the global policeman. Yes, a global actor, yes, an Asia-Pacific power, a European power, but certainly not the global policeman. And yet its actions have belied its words.
Alexander Nekrasov, do you think Russia would like to see a more assertive America that sees itself involved around the world, or one that is taking more of a back seat?
Well, first of all, I think the situation has changed with Ukraine. I think all the talk that America is trying to basically step away from the role of the policeman, world policeman, is now over. The Americans and the Europeans crossed the line in Ukraine. I think the situation is such that the world will never be the same again. I think it was a huge mistake by the Obama administration to get involved in Ukraine to such a level. I think that now many Russian people see America as an enemy. And I think this fascination with the West that we had among the young people and even the middle-aged people is gone now, forever, probably. What I feel, what I pick up in Russia when I travel there now, is that a sense of worry that America is on the warpath. This sense is being strengthened by the notion that China is also worried about America and its interference in the Asia-Pacific region and its pressure on growing on China regarding its conflicts with other neighboring nations, you know, territorial disputes. We are talking about a change, dramatic change, strategically in the world.
It's interesting you say about Ukraine, because if you ask most people who follow politics in the US or in Europe, and they talk about America's involvement elsewhere in the world, they might talk about what happened in Libya, they might talk about whether or not the US will intervene in Syria. But Ukraine will be quite far down the list, and then it will be in terms of diplomatic efforts that the US made in Ukraine. Most people in the West do not see the US involvement in Ukraine in quite those terms that you're suggesting.
Well, the Russians see it in a very, very direct way because, first of all, NATO is associated with America. NATO is surrounding Russia. NATO troops are now present in the Baltics and in Poland. This is a dramatic change in the whole setup in Europe. And the problem with the Ukraine is that there are about 20 million Russian, ethnic Russians living there. Ukraine historically was seen as part of the Russian Federation. And what has happened there, it is a major, major shift in the policy across the world.
Xenia Wickett, here comes the issue then, doesn't it? Because whatever America's actions are around the world, there is the way that America views what they're doing. And America may well see what they're doing, for example, in supporting the Baltic states who they will argue feel like they are threatened by Russia. They will see that as a defensive act. Whereas, as we just heard there from Alexander, some Russians may see that as an offensive act.
As a former American diplomat, I can tell you that you cannot win if you act. You get blamed for acting, and if you don't act, you get blamed for not acting. And I remember vividly the number of times I used to focus on South Asia, where both Indian and Pakistani diplomats would turn to me and say, why isn't America doing more to pressure the other government to do X? And by the way, why are you sticking out your nose in our business? So you can't win, and that's part of why I think, along with resources, along with a change in challenges, that America is actually saying, you know what, we can't win this. So maybe we actually need to find a new way of doing things, a new way of engaging. And sometimes that will be military, the use of NATO. But sometimes it will be political. Sometimes it will be diplomatic. Sometimes it will be economic. And Russia has experienced the broader array of tool set, not just from the United States, but from a broad array of Western nations trying to act together, America acting from within.
Alexander, there are also areas where Russia wants to see American global involvement, aren't there? When it comes to, for example, counterterrorism, where the two nations have actually, in some cases, worked quite closely together, whether that is working together at the UN Security Council or discussing action on how to stop money getting to the hands of terrorists.
Everybody understands that America is the biggest, you know, nuclear superpower and economic superpower. So you have to deal with them anyway, because they are involved everywhere. And it's obviously anti-terrorism is something that is going to be always a joint policy. And we're witnessing it in Syria. It doesn't work very well. At least they're trying. So that's good. And I think there is a distrust after Ukraine. And this distrust on the Russian side is very difficult to take away, because Russia is now feeling, you know, the presence of American troops and others directly on its border. It's never been before that NATO troops would have been, you know, basically from a throw stone away from the Russian borders. And I think that this is a huge mistake by moving NATO.
But if you're Estonia, population 1.5 million, you're a democracy, a young democracy. As they will argue, they say, well, look, we've been invaded by Russia in the past and we have now regained our independence. And we've seen what's happened in Ukraine. We've seen what's happened in Georgia. We're worried that Russia may do the same here. We would like your support. Should NATO therefore turn around and say, sorry, guys, you're on your own?
I think the Baltics are playing a very nasty game, all the three of them. They're all dependent on Russia to a large extent economically and in trade. They complain immediately if there are any cuts, you know, in trade links and economic links. But so they're playing this game because they want help and assistance from the West. They want help and assistance from Russia. And that's why they're pretending to be victims here. This game has been played by them for a long time now.
But doesn't everybody do that? I mean, everybody, I mean, this is what international diplomacy at some level or international geopolitics at some level is. You try and do the best for your country, and that means acting with different actors under different circumstances, in the same way that the US and Russia act together on the Iran nuclear deal, in the same way that they're engaging together on Syria, and yet they disagree on Ukraine. And so you've got an inherent balance between liking a geopolitical world policeman, if you want to use that expression, when they do something that's in your interest, and disliking them when they do something that isn't in your interest. What America is now trying to change, I believe, is that it is continuing to be a global actor, but it is recognizing increasingly that it can't do that alone.
I want to just now look ahead to what happens after November, after the inauguration in January of whoever that may be. And Zainab, perhaps if I can start with you on this. What are the key differences you see when it comes to how a President Clinton or a President Trump will see America's role when it comes to being a global policeman or not?
It's kind of ironic. Historically, the Republican Party has been the party of intervention, the party of engagement, the party of kind of a more hawkish party, whereas the Democrats have been seen as being kind of weak-willed and a little bit feeble on the foreign policy domain. And arguably, those two kinds have shifted to the other side. So you've got in Secretary Clinton, perhaps President Clinton, you would have a president who would be, relative to Obama, more interventionist, definitely on the hawkish side of the Democratic spectrum, so far more centrist in that respect. Probably not so far along as, say, John McCain, but nevertheless, quite interventionist. She has talked about arming the Ukrainians. She's talked about arming the Syrians. A far more engaged president in some respects, although I will add, in the context that America will work far more multilaterally as it has done under President Obama. So this is, again, America leading from within, not from in front or behind, for that matter. Donald Trump, almost the opposite. Certainly not isolationist, but like Rand Paul, but far less interventionist. He's made it absolutely abundantly clear repeatedly that he feels that allies need to deal with their own problems. On the question of NATO and the Baltic states, he says, if you don't pay up, I'm not interested in helping. If you're not going to engage, I'm not going to engage either. He's spoken about the Japanese getting nuclear weapons so that they can stand alone, although he somewhat seemed to plot backwards on that one. So a President Trump would be one, I believe, that would mostly, when America's direct national interests aren't involved, he would leave allies to deal with the problems themselves. And on the other hand, when America's national interests are involved, I think he would be every bit as tough, if not tougher, than a President Clinton would be. So it will be a policy of extremes and certainly a policy of uncertainty. We know that he values the idea of unpredictability.
And Alexander, you know, when you speak to your old friends in the Kremlin, do you get a sense of how the current Russian government views both Trump and Clinton in terms of how involved they're likely to be outside of their own borders?
Nobody is really much excited in the Kremlin over what is being said during the election campaign. It is all posturing. Trump will be just as aggressive towards Russia as Clinton. All this will be forgotten if he's elected. I doubt that he will be elected, but I don't think Russia will benefit much. Because if you listen to his rhetoric carefully, you actually will realize he's actually quite tough on Russia. You know, he basically said, you know, if our planes are, or ships, if Russian planes approach them, I'll tell them to shoot at them, right? So I think it's going to be, for Russia, there is no win-win situation here. Both candidates will be bad for Russia.
Zanya Wickett and Alexander Nekrasov, thank you both very much indeed. You're listening to The Global Election on Monocle 24 with me, Steve Bloomfield. Stay tuned. Coming up, highlights from the next episode.
If you're enjoying listening to The Global Election, then why not listen each week to The Foreign Desk, where we take a look at a single story, find two or three great guests, and try to work out what's going on. It might be the story that's dominating the news that week.
The main thing they wanted to do was to stop, to get rid of Obama. How are you going to negotiate with that?
It might be something we think everybody else is ignoring.
Children, elderly, it doesn't matter. Anybody that is leaving the country is going to be shot.
Either way, the format's the same. Guests who know their stuff are talking knowledgeably so that we all end up knowing a little bit more than we did before. That's The Foreign Desk with Steve Bloomfield, airing every Saturday at 12 noon London time and available at any time on monocle.com.
Next time on The Global Election, what will it mean for America's relationship with China? Our guests will include Chaz Freeman, the man who arguably knows more about this than anyone else. A one-time director for Chinese affairs at the State Department, he was also a key figure in the decision to re-establish military relations with China in the 1990s. Oh yes, and he was the president's interpreter when Richard Nixon went to China in 1972.
Since around 1875 or 1880, the United States has been the world's largest economy. That's 140 years, a long time. And we're losing that status. Since 1945, we have been the preeminent power, in fact, the dominant power in the Western Pacific, having finished off Japanese power, the Japanese having done in the European imperialists. And we're now losing that status as China returns to wealth and power and influence in the region. So there's nervousness about loss of status, about shifting power balances. And we have had a relationship in the region with many states, some of them allies, some of them partners, some of them simply friendly countries. which now have territorial disputes with China in the East and South China Seas, that we have felt obliged to defend, help them defend. And this has put the U.S. and China into a direct military confrontation that is becoming even more fraught with danger than the Taiwan issue, which has always been with us.
That's it for episode one of The Global Election. Episode two will be available from next Sunday. You can't vote for us, but you can rate us. If you liked what you heard, why not give us a rating on iTunes? You can also find us on SoundCloud and monocle.com/radio. The Global Election was produced by Rhys James, researched by Bill Luty, and edited by Alex Funnell. My name is Steve Bloomfield. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.